Blog Talk Radio. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hello, podcast family. Thank you for tuning in. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, the Messenger Edition. I'm Nurse Carmen. We have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And next, we will be having a conversation with the messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you all for tuning in tonight. Tonight, I want to let you know that there are no shoulds or shouldn't in God's world. Do what you want to do. Do what reflects you. What represents you as a grander version of yourself. If you want to feel bad, feel bad. But judge not, and neither condemn, for you know not why a thing occurs, nor to what end. And remember you this, that what you condemn will condemn you, and that which you judge, you will one day become. Rather, seek to change those things or support others who are changing those things which no longer reflect your highest sense of who you are. Yes, bless all, for all is the creation of God through life living, and that is the highest creation. Now, I'll repeat that again. That there is no shoulds and should not in God's world. But then you say, but those who have taught me all about the rights and wrong, the do's and the don'ts, the shoulds and the shouldn'ts, told me all those rules were laid down by you, God. Then those who taught you were wrong. God has never set down a right or wrong, a do or a don't. To do so would be to strip you completely of your greatest gift, the opportunity to do as you please and experience the results of that, the chance to create yourself anew in the image and likeness of who you really are, the space to produce a reality of a higher and higher you, based on your grandest idea of what it is of which you are capable. To say that something, a thought, a word, an action is wrong would be as much as to tell you not to do it. To tell you not to do it would be to prohibit you. To prohibit you would be to restrict you. To restrict you would be to deny the reality of who you really are, as well as the opportunity for you to create and experience that truth. There are those who say that God has given you free will, yet these same people claim that if you do not obey God, God will send you to hell. What kind of free will is that? Does this not make a mockery of God? To say nothing of any sort of a true relationship between us, between you and God? Well, someone would say, well, now you're getting to another area, this whole business of heaven and hell. From what I'm gathering here, there is no such thing as hell. There is hell, but it is not what you think. And you do not experience it for the reasons you have been given. So you say, what is hell? It is the experience of the worst possible outcome of your choices, decisions, and creations. It is the natural consequence of any thought which denies God or say no to who you are in relationship to God. It is the pain you suffer through wrong thinking. Yet even the term wrong thinking is a misnomer, because there is no such thing as that which is wrong. Hell is the opposite of joy. It is unfulfillment. It is knowing who and what you are and failing to experience that. It is being less. That is hell, and there is none greater for your soul. But hell does not exist as this place you have fantasized, where you burn in some everlasting fire, or exists in some state of everlasting torment. What purpose would God have in that? Even if God did hold this extraordinary, ungodly thought that you did not deserve heaven, why would God have a need to seek some kind of revenge or punishment for your failing? Wouldn't it be a simple matter for God to just dispose of you? What vengeful part of God will require that God subject you to eternal suffering of a type at a level beyond description? If you answer the need for justice, would not a simple denial of communion with God in heaven serve the ends of justice? Is the unending infliction of pain also required? I tell you, there is no such experience after death as you have constructed in your fear-based theology. Yet there is an experience of the soul so unhappy, so incomplete, so less than whole, so separate from God's greatest joy, that to your soul, this would be hell. But I tell you, God do not send you there, nor do God cause this experience to be visited upon you. You yourself create the experience. Whenever and however you separate yourself from your own highest thoughts about you, you yourself create the experience. Whenever you deny yourself, whenever you reject who and what you really are. Yet even this experience is never eternal. It cannot be, for it is not God's plan that you shall be separated from God forever and ever. Indeed, such a thing is an impossibility, for to achieve such an event, not only would you have to deny who you are, God would have to as well. And this God would never do. And so long as one of us holds the truth about you shall ultimately prevail. Then you say, but if there is no hell, does that mean I can do what I want, act as I wish, commit any act without fear of retribution? It is fear that you need in order to be, do, and have what is instinctively right. Must you be threatened in order to be good? And what is being good? Who gets to have the final say about that? Who sets the guidelines? Who makes the rules? I tell you this, you are your own rule maker. You set the guidelines, and you decide how well you have done, how well you are doing. For you are the one who has decided who and what you really are, and who you want to be. And you are the only one who can assess how well you're doing. No one else will judge you ever. For why and how could God judge God's own creation and call it bad? If God wanted you to be and do everything perfectly, God would have left you in the state of total perfection whence you came. The whole point of the process was for you to discover yourself, create yourself as you truly are and as you truly wish to be. Yet, you cannot be that unless you also have a choice to be something else. Should God therefore punish you for making a choice that God himself laid before you? If God did not want you to make the second choice, why would God create other than the first? This is a question you must ask yourself before you would assign God the role of the condemning God. The direct answer to your question is yes, you may do as you wish without fear of retribution. It may serve you, however, to be aware of consequences. Consequences are result comes. These are not at all the same as retributions or punishment. Outcomes are simply that. They are what results from the natural application of natural law. They are that which occur quite predictably as a consequence of what has occurred. All physical life functions in accordance with natural laws. Once you remember these laws and apply them, you have mastered life at the physical level. what seems like punishment to you or what you would call evil or bad luck is nothing more than a natural law asserting itself. Then you say, then if I were to know these laws and obey them, I would never have a moment's trouble again. Is that what I'm saying here? You would never experience yourself as being in what you call trouble. You would not understand any life situation to be a problem. You would not encounter any circumstances with trepidation. You would put an end to all worries, doubts, and fears. You would live as you fantasize Adam and Eve lived, not as disembodied spirits in the realm of the absolute, but as embodied spirits in the realm of the relativity. Yet, you would have all the freedom, all the joy, all the peace, and all the wisdom, understanding the power of the spirit you are. You will be a fully realized being. This is the goal of your soul. This is its purpose, to fully realize itself while in the body, to become the embodiment of all that really is. This is God's plan for you. This is God's idea, that God should become realized through you, that thus the concept is turned into experience, that God might know God's self experientially. The laws of the universe are laid, that God laid down. They are perfect laws, creating perfect functions of the physical. Have you ever seen anything more perfect than a snowflake? Its design, its symmetry, its conformity to itself, and originality from all else. All are a mystery. You wonder at the miracle of the awesome display of nature. Yet, if God can do this with a single snowflake, what think you God can do, have done with the universe? Were you to see the symmetry of it, the perfection of its design, from the largest body to the smallest particle, you would not be able to hold the truth of it in your reality. Even now, as you get glimpses of it, you cannot yet imagine or understand its implications. Yet you know these are implications far more complex and far more extraordinary than your present comprehension can embrace. Your Shakespeare said it wonderfully. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. So then, how can I know these laws? How can I learn them? It is not a question of learning, but remembering. Then you say, well, how can I remember them? Begin by being still. Quiet the outer world so that the inner world might bring you signs, sight. This insight is what you seek, yet you cannot have it while you are so deeply concerned with your outer reality. Seek, therefore, to go within as much as possible. And when you are not going within, come from within as you deal with the outside world. Remember this. If you do not go within, go without. Put it in the first person as you repeat it to make it more personally. If I do not go within, I go without. You have been going without all your life, yet you do not have to and never did. There is nothing you cannot be. There is nothing you cannot do. There is nothing you cannot have. Now, that sounds like a pie-in-the-sky promise. What other kind of promise would you have God make? Would you believe God if God promised you less? For thousands of years, people have disbelieved the promise of God for the most extraordinary reasons. They were too good to be true. So you have chosen a lesser promise, a lesser love. For the highest promise of God proceeds from the highest love. Yet you cannot conceive of a perfect love, and so a perfect promise is also inconceivable, as is a perfect person. Therefore, you cannot believe even in yourself. Failing to believe in any of this means failure to believe in God. For believing God produces belief in God's greatest gift, unconditional love, and God's greatest promise, unlimited potential. But then they say, well, you have written so in your own scriptures in many ways, in many places. Look to see what you have written in Genesis chapter 11, verse 6 of the Bible. It says, and the Lord said, behold, the people are one, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Now, can you trust that? Now, well, you say, well, that does not answer the question of the feeble, the infirm, the handicapped, those who are limited. Do you think they are limited, as you put it? Not of their choice? Do you imagine that a human soul encounters life challenges, whatever they may be, by accident? Is this your imagining? Then you say, well, do you mean a soul chooses what kind of life it would experience ahead of time? No, that would defeat the purpose of the encounter. The purpose is to create your own experience. The challenges and obstacles, the opportunities and options with which to create your experience. You may select the color of your palettes, the tools for your chest, the machinery for your shop. What you create with these is your business. This is the business of life. Your potential is unlimited in all that you've chosen to do. Do not assume that a soul which has incarnated in a body which you call limited has not reached its full potential, for you do not know what that soul was trying to do. You do not understand its agenda. You are unclear as to its intents. Therefore, bless every person and condition and give thanks. Thus you affirm the perfection of God's creation and show your faith in it, for nothing happens by accident in God's world. And there is no such thing as a coincidence, nor is the world buffered by random choice or something you call fate. If a snowflake is utterly perfect in its design, do you not think that the same could be said about something as magnificent as your life? And then you say, but even Jesus healed the sick. Why would he heal them if their conditions were so perfect? Jesus did not heal those he healed because he saw their conditions as imperfect. He healed those he healed because he saw those souls asking for healing as part of the process. He saw the perfection of the process. He recognized and understood the soul's intention. Had Jesus felt that all illness, mental or physical, represented imperfection, would he not have simply healed everyone on the planet all at once? Do you doubt that he could do this? And I know y'all say, no, I believe he could have. Good. Then the mind begs to know, why did he not do it? Why would the Christ choose to have some suffer and others be healed? For that matter, why does God allow any suffering at any time? This question has been asked before, and the answer remains the same. There is perfection in the process, and all life rises out of choice. It is not appropriate to interfere with choice, nor to question it. It is particularly inappropriate to condemn it. What is appropriate is to observe it and then do whatever might be done to assist the soul in seeking and making a higher choice. Be watchful, therefore, of the choices of others, but not judgmental. Know that their choice is perfect for them in this moment now. Yet, stand ready to assist them should the moment come when they need a newer choice, a different choice, a higher choice. Move into communion with the souls of others and their purpose. Their intentions will be clear to you. This is what Jesus did with those he healed and with all those whose lives he touched. Jesus healed all of those who came to him or who sent others to him supplicating for them. He did not perform a random healing. To have done so would have been to violate a sacred law of the universe. And that law is allow each soul to walk its path. Now, but does that mean we must not help anyone without being asked? Surely not, or we would never be able to help the starving children, or the tortured masses, or the poor, or the downtrodden anywhere. All humanity efforts would be lost, all charity forgiven. Must we wait for an individual to cry out in desperation or for a nation of people to plead for help? Therefore, we are allowed to do what is obviously right. You see, the question answers itself. If a thing is obviously right to do, but remember to exercise extreme judgment regarding what you call right and wrong. A thing is only right or wrong because you say it is. A thing is not right or wrong instinctively. Righteousness or wrongness is not an intricate condition. It is a subjective judgment and a personal value system. By your subjective judgment, do you create yourself? By your personal values, do you determine and demonstrate who you are? The world exists exactly as it is so that you may make these judgments. If the world existed in perfect condition, your life process of creation, self-creation, would be terminated. It would end. A lawyer's career would end tomorrow were there no more litigations. A doctor's career would end tomorrow where there are no more illnesses. All of us would be through creating where there's nothing more to create. We all of us have a vested interest in keeping the game going. Much as we all say we would like to solve all the problems, we dare not solve all the problems or there would be nothing left for us to do. There would be nothing for us to do. The religious communities also holds their clarity. This is why it attacks uniformly any definition of God which does not include fear, judgment, and retribution, and any definition of self which does not include their own idea of the only path to God. If I say to you, you are God, where does that leave religion? If I say to you, you are healed, where does that leave science and medicine? If I say to you, you shall live in peace, where does that leave the peacemakers? If I say to you, the world is fixed, where does that leave the world? The world is filled with essentially two kinds of people, those who give you things you want and those who fix things. In a sense, even those who simply give you things you want, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, are also fixers. For to have a desire for something is often to have a need for it. That is why addicts are said to need a fix. Be careful, therefore, that desire not becomes addiction. So am I saying the world will always have problems? Or am I saying that you will eventually want it that way, that God actually wanted it that way? No, I'm saying that the world exists the way it exists, just as a snowflake exists the way it exists, quite by design. You have created it that way, just as you have created your life exactly as it is. God wants what you want. The day you really want an end to hunger, there will be no more hunger. God has given you all the resources with which to do that. You have all the tools with which to make that choice. You have not made it, not because you cannot make it. The world could end world hunger tomorrow. You choose not to make it. So I'm showing you in stark terms that the world exists the way it exists because you have chosen for it to. You are systematically destroying your own environment, then pointing to so-called natural causes as evidence of God's cruel hoax or nature's harsh ways. You have played the hoax on yourself, and it is your ways which are cruel. Nothing is more gentle than nature, and nothing has been more cruel to nature than man. Yet, you step aside from all involvement in this, deny all responsibility. It is not your fault, you say, and in this you are right. It is not a question of fault. It is a matter of choice. A matter of choice. The world is in the condition it is in because of you and the choices you have made or failed to make. Not to decide is to decide. The earth is in the shape it is in because of you and the choices you have made or failed to make. But here's a question. But I did not choose to get hit by the truck. I did not choose to get mugged by that robber or raped by that maniac. People could say that. There are people in the world who would say that. You are not at root cause for the conditions which exist, which created in the robber the desire or the perceived need to steal. You have all created the consciousness which makes rape possible. It is when you see in yourself that which causes the crime that you begin at last to heal the condition from which it sprang. Feed your hungry. Give dignity to your poor. Grant opportunity to your less fortunate. End the prejudice which keeps masses hurtled and angry with little promise of a better tomorrow. Put away your pointless taboos and restrictions upon sexual energy. Rather, help others to truly understand its wonder and to channel it properly. Do these things and you will go a long way towards ending robbery and rape forever. And as for the so-called accident, the truck coming around the bend, the brick falling from the sky, learn to greet each incident as a small part of a larger mosaic. You have come here to work out an individual plan for your own salvation. Yet, salvation does not mean saving yourself from the snares of the devil. There is no such thing as the devil, and hell does not exist. You are saving yourself from the oblivious of non-realization. You cannot lose in this battle. You cannot fail. Thus, it is not a battle at all, but simply a process. Yet, if you do not know this, you will see it as a constant struggle. You may even believe in the struggle long enough to create a whole religion around it. This religion will teach that struggle is the point of it all. This is a false teaching. It is not struggling that the process proceeds. It is in surrendering that the victory is won. Accidents happen because they do. Certain elements of life process has come together in a particular way at a particular time with particular results, with results which you choose to call unfortunate for your own particular reason. Yet, they may not be unfortunate at all. Give it the agenda of the soul. Tell you this, there is no coincidence and nothing happens by accident. Each event, an adventure is called to yourself by yourself in order that you might create and experience who you really are. All true masters know this. This is why mystic masters remain unperturbed in the face of the worst experiences of life, as you would define them. The great teachers of Christian religion understood this. They know that Jesus was not perturbed by the crucifixion, but expected it. He could have walked away, but he did not. He could have stopped the process at any point. He had that power, yet he did not. He allowed himself to be crucified in order that he might stand as man's eternal salvation. Look, he said, at what I can do. Look at what it is true, and know that these things and more shall you do also. For have Jesus not said, ye are gods, yet you do not believe. If you cannot then believe in yourself, believe in Jesus. Such was Jesus' compassion that he begged for a way and created it to impact the world that all might come to heaven, which is self-realization, if in no other way than through him. For he defeated misery and death, and so might you. The grandest teaching of Christ was not that you shall have everlasting life, but that you do. Not that you shall have brotherhood in God, but that you do. Not that you shall have whatever you request, but that you do. All that is required is to know this, for you are the creator of your reality. And life can show up no other way for you than that way in which you think it will. You think it into being. This is the first step in creation. God the Father. God the Father is thought. Your thought is the parent which gives birth to all things. Now, the question is, this is one of the laws we are to remember. Yes, this is the first step in creation. God the Father is thought. Your thought is the parent which gives birth to all things. Now, that's important. And so I told you them all since the beginning of time, over and over have I told you them. Teacher after teacher has God sent you. But you do not listen to God's teachers. You kill them. But why? Why do we kill the holiest among us? We kill them or dishonor them, which is the same thing. Why? Because they stand against every thought you have that would deny God. And deny God you must if you are to deny yourself. So the question is, why would I want to deny myself or God? Because you are afraid, and because God's promises are too good to be true, because you cannot accept the grandest truth, and so you must reduce yourself to a spirituality which teaches fear and dependence and tolerance rather than love and power and acceptance. You are filled with fear, and your biggest fear is that God's biggest promise might be life's biggest lie. And so you create the biggest fantasy you can to defend yourself against this. You claim that any promise which gives you the power and guarantees you the love of God must be the false promise of the devil. God would never make such a promise, you tell yourself. Only the devil would. To tempt you into denying God's true identity as the fearsome, judgmental, jealous, vengeful, and punishing entity of entities. Even though this description better fits the definition of a devil, there was one, you have assigned devilish characteristics to God in order to convince yourself not to accept the God-like promise of your Creator, or the godlike qualities of the self. Such is the power of fear. Such is the power of fear. So I'm going to end this podcast tonight. I thank each and every one of you that took the time to to listen to this podcast. And we're going to end on this note. And I'm just playing this music to let you know that I know a place that you can go. And I don't even have to take you there. You take your own self there, because remember, you are your own creator. And you, if you think about it, you create yourself anew each day. You determine how your day is going to go. You determine how things are going to affect you. So you are the creator. And when you come to truly understand this, you'll be able to apply these principles and live life without fear. So what I'm trying to say is, let go of fear. Let go of fear. Just remember, the first law is that you can be, do, and have whatever you can imagine. The second law is that you attract what you fear. Attract what you fear. I thank you all very much for listening in tonight. I pray that something was said tonight that it lifted your soul and your spirit to help you want to see things from a different perspective, so that you can truly be who it is that you want to be, or who you feel that you should be. And remember, if you don't know, go within. And when you go within, I promise you, you will not go without. I love you all very much. What I'm going to do, I think we're going to change our hours from 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So if possible, let's get ready for 8 o'clock on Thursday for our new broadcast hours. And next Sunday, we'll be doing that at 8 o'clock so that some of us older folks can get our much-needed rest. I love you all very much. Have a great evening, and remember, you can do all things through God, the Spirit, and Christ that resides in you. Good night, everyone. Love you all, and I'll talk to you again.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.